Yo, yo, what's good, world? This is your man, Jeff, a.k.a. Blacksmith, jumping off once again on the Jump Off with another episode of the Jump Off that is not your weekly quickies, I don't think.
Nah, it's just a podcast.
Yeah, just a Jump Off podcast tonight, you know what I'm saying, representing.
You're doing old school.
So, as you can see, you have yours truly, Blacksmith, on the line, as well as the man, the myth, the legend, that dude that named Dave.
Dave.
What's popping, that dude?
Hey, I'm here. I'm tired. I got off work. It's kind of cold in the shy now. It's officially fall, man.
I was going to say, happy fall, brother. You ready? You got your pumpkin out?
Nigga, you can ask me if I got a damn pumpkin. You think I'm going to waste my money on a pumpkin?
You got your pumpkin carved?
Carved? You the one with the kids. I don't work. I don't do stuff like that.
Yeah, I still don't even carve pumpkins, man.
Oh, you don't do that for your daughter, man?
That's white people stuff. No, I'm just playing.
Shout out to the white folks carving pumpkins.
No, I'm just
and that's funny that you say that, though, because the jewel across the street from my house, not too across the street, but, you know, down the street on 59, they have all the pumpkins outside. Yeah. And every time I go by, I have not seen that one black person buy a pumpkin, but I've seen every single time two or three white people every single time. I go grocery shopping every week. And this has been going on about a month now, people. So there may be some validity in Blacksmith's comment.
Yeah, I think so. Every time I see those types of things, those types of stores that have the pumpkins or the watermelons outside, I wonder if people steal those. Since you can go outside and just, you can just scoop one and throw it in your cart on the way out.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Just go ahead and wash that bad boy up and say, babe, we're making some pumpkin pie. Oh, yeah.
That is hilarious, man.
Yeah, yeah. But nah, no pumpkins for me. Never have done it. I don't waste money on stuff like that. May sound crazy. Oh, Dave, you're not in the spirit. I don't care. I'd rather spend that money on a damn steak.
Fuck a pumpkin, huh?
Yeah, I'm gonna get some of that substance so I can eat, son.
Right, that's hilarious.
That's my boo-hoo Halloween moment there. All right.
Hilarious. Yes, but yeah, yes. Man, so other than that, you doing good?
Oh, yeah, we're officially in fall. It's October now. We're recording this here. So we're close to the end of the year. 2013 is almost gone already, Blacksmith.
I know, man. The years are flying by. The older we get, the faster they go.
And I was literally saying, like, around this time last year, I was planning for New Year's Eve, and I can't believe, like, that's already done for. And it's like, wow, I got to plan for next New Year's Eve now. I'm like, where is the time going by, people? People, if you're listening here, you know, just think. We're about to hop into 2014. Next year, you know, we'll be knocking on 2020. And next year, you know, we might get the Jetson status, hopefully, with the flying little
flying
scooters.
Cars and all that.
Yeah,
huh?
You live above the clouds like Gangstar.
Nice Gangstar reference you slipped in there.
Yes, thank you.
As always, you can check us out at thejumpoffpodcast.com or on Facebook, of course, because we are heavy on our Facebook page. Jump Off Podcast, and that's pretty much all, man. We FUX with Twitter every now and again, but Facebook is definitely our bread and butter. Wouldn't you say that, dude?
Yeah, I mean, I have too much to say for 140 characters.
Exactly, that's the limit.
People, if you see the way we have a group chat, we mentioned before, if you see what I type in my group chat, 140 characters will piss me off because they will probably get about 9 messages in one fell swoop.
Wow.
You know, when I hit send, that'd be about a good 9 messages, you would say, probably, wouldn't it? Like, what stuff I'd be typing?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
I type paragraphs and summaries and dissertations when I chat with them. It's not like, hey, what's up? Hey, blah, blah, blah. It's like, hey, this one thing's going on October 5th. We got to go to this, you know, I'm really going hard on my little thumbs here. So, not Twitter, Facebook, yeah. I mean, we mess with Twitter, but you know how that goes.
Right. I feel you. I was going to say that as we're recording this show, I'm sipping on Svedka. some Svedka and tonic with a splash of OJ in there. I call it a screwed up screwdriver. I just made that up.
And I am drinking on a mixture of V8 fruit medley and ginger ale.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Little sparkling veggies there.
Exactly. So, boy, the tide has changed from the inception of this show to now. We got Blacksmith on that vodka, on that ooey, and I'm over here on fruit punch.
Yep, you know what it is.
Yes, sir. No alcohol for me. I'm good.
No doubt. All right, so are you ready to get the proceedings proceeding this evening?
Let's talk a little bit here.
Before I get into it, let me say a special shout out to LQ. She basically reappeared on our site earlier. Was that yesterday? I believe. Did you see her post? That dude.
Yeah. She posted something on Sunday. We're recording this on Monday.
Yeah. So she's back, and she said good Sunday morning. So she's back in the mix. So shout out to LQ. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Okay, so we can go ahead and dive in. I'm going to go ahead and let you kick it off there, dude.
Oh, yeah. As we're recording this right now, I am currently watching Derrick Rose playing basketball live.
Oh, wow.
No that, shit, people.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and you want to know something, too? As this is on a Monday, I saw Derrick Rose plays on a Saturday.
Wow. So the wait is over.
I know it's preseason, people, but where the fuck is everybody talking about Derrick Rose not playing?
So the return has returned.
The return is officially, they have a new commercial. I don't know if you saw it. It's Derrick Rose and Common and yeah. Big Sean. Yeah. You know, I forgot some other cats in there. Shout out to Big Sean for getting engaged.
Oh, yeah. You know? To the chick from Glee.
Yeah, he got himself a fine little chick there, you know.
To quote Big Sean, he said, my new girl from Glee and shit probably make more money than me and shit. So he got himself a rich girl.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so, you know, Big Sean in the commercial. But the funny thing is we harped on this cat but not playing for so long.
Right.
And even his preseason, we're not talking about the fact he's playing now. I mean, yeah. we got nothing to complain about no more, people. He's playing.
He's back.
He is back. I mean, hopefully, knock on wood, doesn't hurt himself again. But I will admit, as I'm watching the game right now as we're recording this here, he's going to have to play. Oh, he just dropped a three as we speak here. So the game is now 46-all for the Bulls. Sorry, giving play-by-play while we're recording this here.
Who are they playing?
Yeah.
Who are they playing?
Memphis.
Okay, cool.
And he just got a steal here as we speak here. He drives to the hole and gets fouled. Oh, no, he didn't get fouled. But I'm sorry. Let me stop. I'm back to the show here. See, that's how I am. I'm a big basketball junkie. But we complained. We were upset. We saw how hard this Bulls team fought last year, right? Mm-hmm. And even though it's preseason, there's no national, not even local news. It's mentioned the fact that Derrick Rose played 20 minutes on Saturday night. Here he is. He's knocking on 20 minutes already in the third quarter here on Monday evening here.
Would you say that's because he doesn't have a big personality?
It's just weird. Like, any other situation, if this was LeBron, I know he's
Oh, my gosh.
Imagine, I mean, we talked hard about Derrick Rose. Imagine LeBron went through the situation where he took a whole year off for an ACL. You know, we would be televising this on freaking NBC, and NBC doesn't even have a contract in the NBA. You know, that's how hardcore this would be. But it's good to see Derrick Rose back. One thing I will say from my analysis is that in these 8 preseason games, he's going to play no less than 20 minutes every night. Now, normally in the preseason, you might get 15 to 20. He's getting 20 to 30 easily because, you know, Thibodeau is like a slave driver anyway when it comes to it. But I can tell from the first game, there's rust there. The speed is there. That's one thing for sure. But his body is faster than his mind a little bit. Like, you see the glimpse. I saw him dunk, you know. I saw him go on a fast break and double clutch for the layup, you know. He's going to the hole, and he's trying to dunk on folks again, people. And what he says now that his vertical is even higher than pre-injury. His vertical was 37 inches. He says now he's at 42.
Are you serious?
Yes, he claims he had a 42-inch vertical. He said prior to the injury, he never got no higher than 37.
How did he increase it after the injury?
Well, the one thing that when you have an ACL injury like the one he had, and when you have that damn good insurance, he ain't worried about Obamacare.
he ain't covered under Obamacare.
Yeah, he ain't worried about Obamacare, boy, you know, the ACA, you know, the Affordable Care Act, right. You know. You do so much strengthening and so much, you know, not just lifting, but so much core cardio work as well. Right. I can attest to that, like with my knee surgery and things of that nature, nothing like on Derrick Rose status, but when you're in therapy, you really go hard than which how you probably would, but it's more core. You're working out so many other issues and other things that you probably wouldn't have focused before, even though he was a professional athlete. Right. So a lot of times these guys, even though with this major injury, come back stronger than before because of the way how hard you got to work to get back.
Right.
So he has a 5-inch, he added 5 inches to his vertical. And I saw that Saturday night. He didn't get the dunk on people, but he sure went at Roy Hibbert a few times.
That's great.
And Roy Hibbert's 7'2", 7'3". And he went at him. He got fouled. But he went at that nigga. And that takes some balls when you're 6'2", 6'3", coming off ACL. That means that he got his confidence back. He a little bit faster. You know, like, he's fast, but his mind has got to catch up with his body now. You can tell that, like, he's like Mighty Mouse, and then he loses the ball and kind of fumbles a couple of turnovers here and there. You know, but I think that's good that this is happening now in the preseason compared to when the regular season starts in a few weeks.
I have a statement and a question for you, Dave. Mm-hmm. My statement is I'm really excited to see him, because I did see the highlights of the game he played on Saturday, and I love the fact that he was going to the hoop again like he always does with reckless abandon. He wasn't really playing tentative. I think that's a great sign. My question is, how long did it take from tip-off of that game for all the Bulls fans to forgive him for what he did last year?
it was over as soon as the jump ball went up.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I mean, I still am I'm not forgiving, because I can understand. Here's one thing that bothers me is that he was in a contract year, and it was in his best negotiations to sit out. I can understand that from a business perspective, right? I don't know if I'm being contradictory or not. But he already has signed a big-time contract. He was the last year of his rookie deal and already had the five-year new Derrick Rose Max deal in place, you know? So if he was ready to play and there's a chance for a championship, I mean, I think he should have went in. And, you know, he felt that – I don't know. He felt maybe he wasn't ready, or we all feel that his brother is the culprit. And I honestly feel that his brother – you know, even though he's making all this money, his brother's still big brother and running things.
Right.
That's the way it looks. And he's still got that fear, but a fear of respect, because his brother's like his dad.
Right.
So I think that's more of the culprit than anything else. I wanted to see him back, you know, if he was healthy. That's the thing, but if you're healthy and you can play, and the doctors, I know it's bad said news that they should never reported it, that, you know, by his medical records that he could not re-injure it again. It had to be another freak accident, tears ACL. If that happens, I think he should have went out there. I honestly still feel that way.
Yeah. Me too. I know, to speak back to your point about, you know, how if it was other stars, you know, coming back from his injury, it would be so many, you know, so much more media coverage. I know that when Kobe returns, since he's supposed to be crazy ahead of schedule, they're going to be all over that on the news.
They said he was at shoot around.
Yeah, that, like, dude is a beast, man. Like,
you know,
talking about
NBA,
mind over matter.
It ain't mind over matter. The NBA don't blood test for HGH. That nigga, he in a hyperbaric chamber right now. His blood, every drop of blood in his body has been recycled, pulled out, and put back in.
You think so?
Yeah, oh, man. Kobe is, you know, you forget. Kobe makes $30 million a year on basketball alone. The man has endorsements, and he didn't get divorced from Vanessa, who would have took half in the long run.
Right.
Kobe's got bank. He can go to Europe and get the best money that can heal his ass that may be illegal in the States, but it's, you know, it is what it is. It's still medical, you know, it's still good by the medical board up in Europe. He going over there, and they probably took his whole his Achilles out and built, and with his own muscle and tissue, built him a new Achilles and reasserted it in there. He said, Kobe, if you work your ass off like you normally do, you can be better than ever. Go ahead, play. But you know, think about that in some kind of German accent, and I don't have a good German accent, you know, so.
That is hilarious, man. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he's all about them rings, so I wouldn't put anything past him as far as taking those shortcuts.
You know what, though? I have no problem with HGH. That's a whole other conversation I think we should do. I have no problem with HGH as long as it's used for recovery. Because what do the fans get if these guys are hurt and not playing? Because we pay to watch on TV. That's why we pay up upgrade to the HD. Or we go to the games. Like, me and my boy, well, I don't mind the Milwaukee Bucks fan, but I want to see Kevin Garnett play. You know, and we got courtside seats coming up in the next month and a half.
Right.
You know, we pay their salaries to see them play. You know, and if Kobe, man, got a little bit of the clear, you know, got some of
that young clear.
He got some of that big, like that Barry Bonds, like Kanye West, you know, from 07.
Right.
You know, I mean, he got a little pump, a little something in him, little deer antler. You know?
Yeah, I think he's earned the right to do that.
Because the one thing about basketball compared to baseball, these guys, it's not helping their jump shot.
Right.
It's just recovery so they can take the toll of an 82-game regular season. Jump shot takes skill. HGH is not going to do that. You got to, like, Kobe, you know, how he worked to get his jump shot. Like, Derrick Rose is a better jump shooter now than he first came to the league. Mm-hmm. You know, like, layups and then certain angles and Tim Duncan, the master of the bank shot. HGH will never help him to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, I think we should have another discussion about that down the line, but if these cats in basketball, and it may be a double standard, but if it's in basketball and they use HGH, I'm like, hell, let them, I want them on the court. We pay our money. I mean, we want to see them play.
Yeah.
So shout out to Derrick Rose if he was using HGH. I wouldn't be mad if he was a little nervous because he may said, I just started this HGH and I want to see if I come back super healthy. If he came in like a real nigga, be like, yeah, nigga, I wanted to get back. I didn't feel comfortable. I got on that fucking clear, and it added 5 inches to my vertical. You know what? I'll say bravo, motherfucker, bravo.
Yeah, yeah, I feel you, man. That's definitely something we can dedicate like another show or long segment to our opinions on that, because I totally agree with you.
Yeah, as long as it's used for recovery. Mm-hmm. After you recover and the doctor says you're A-OK, then you got to get off the shit.
Yeah. Real
That's
talk.
Me,
real talk.
So shout out to Derrick Rose. The preseason game's going on. And it's been kind of sloppy here, and he's out in a fast break right now as we speak, and he gets fouled. You know, so hopefully with the healthy Bulls team, and this is the prediction now, Blacksmith. We know that if Derrick Rose is healthy, and the way this team is, you know, we got Jimmy Butler moved to the starting lineup. Luol Deng is back from a jacked up spinal tap. I got some insider information from people in the hospital saying that there may be a malpractice involved, but he may not sue. You know, because he's that type of guy, because the reason why he didn't recover from his spinal tap as fast as the average person should have been out of the hospital, like outpatient, but he was in there for a week and a half because of some fucked up doctors, but he's back now. This team can win 55-60 games this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's wide open, and we'll definitely, you know, see what happens, so mm-hmm. It's going to be an exciting year. Good stuff, man.
Sure. Yes.
So what about our beloved Bears?
Ah, shit.
Yeah, man, we started off 3-0. You know what I'm saying? And
like we always do.
Right. We dropped.
Like we always do about this time. Like Kanye always says. Yeah.
And we've dropped the last two games. I would say yesterday was expected. Yesterday's game was an expected loss, but not the Detroit game. But what is your assessment at this point of the 3-2 Bears, that dude?
They're a good team, but not a great team.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still so many holes that needs to be addressed. Like, Cutler starts off good, and then for some reason, when he go back to his old ways, you know.
He was throwing that sad sling pass yesterday.
Man. I will say this, though. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey's going to be a stud. If he's going to be able to pick up the slack, because I don't know if you watched all the replays from yesterday's game. When you saw Marshall, he was triple teamed.
Yeah.
I mean, he got that one touchdown at the end of the game. I mean, that really, you know, it is what it is. That's, you know, they got that one. But the whole game, he was double and triple covers. They showed one scene in the end zone where there was three defenders around him within arm's length of Brandon Marshall. That's ridiculous. And Alshon Jeffrey made him pay. He had 10 catches for 218 yards. He is just as big as Marshall and just as strong. He's just his second year. He had issues in college about his weight. And we've seen these first 2 years besides his injury, he's maintained his weight. He's been in great shape.
Yeah, yes. I agree.
So, I mean, that's great to have opposite side now, because if he can do this on a regular basis now, like, okay, if you're going to double team and spy Brandon Marshall like that, and you leave Jeffrey one-on-one, eventually you're going to say, we can't do that now because he's going to kill us, and then you're going to force to either double team, bring his safeties over top to double him, but that's going to open the tight end for Bennett, which had a decent season right now. Mm-hmm. So it all depends on Marshall's progression Jeffrey's progression, but you need a little bit more. The offensive line, you know, you're starting two rookies. They did good the first couple of games, but we are seeing that Jay Cutler, much to we want to talk about him, he was kind of running for his life, which made him do a lot of those bad throws again.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that aspect of it. He got fucked up a lot in that game.
Thank you.
I thought he was Rex Grossman for a minute. I was like, oh, goodness. I was having flashbacks, but yeah, I agree.
As much as we talk about how these bad interceptions are and these fumbles, I mean, a lot of times he's not having enough time in the pocket, because as soon as he sits back and is trying to go through his, you know, at least go through your second progression, that's when the second comes, you know, after hiking the ball, and he's already flushed out the pocket. You know, so when you're in constant rate, like, you know, they show how Peyton Manning, how persistent cerebral he is. He can hike a ball and have the ball out to his first, second, or third option within 2.4 seconds. Though showing from last night's game, which is a fucking barn burn. Did you watch that one?
Yeah, crazy.
Good God, you know, but Jay Cutler doesn't even have that opportunity when he gets out to see his first read, which is Marshall, of course, normally, or, of course, the way the game's going yesterday, Jeffrey is probably his first read. If he recognized that Marshall is probably being double coverage or the safety has come over the top, then he's like, damn, by the time he's looking, he's already running out the pocket.
Yeah. It reminds me of Jay Cutler, Rex Grossman days. I would say the offense, it was like, oh shit, boom! Yeah, like 2 seconds, man. And it was a rap for him.
Remember the movie, Necessary Roughness with Sinbad? And the one quarterback, he hiked the ball, he ran toward the referee. He's like, blow the whistle! Then him and the referee got knocked the fuck out. Yep. That's couple of the last two games.
Yep.
He's running saying, blow the whistle! But then he's chucking the ball and getting caught up with some dumb ass turnovers.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think they can bounce back, though, because next week we play the 0-5 New York Giants.
Can we pencil that in, that dude?
Well, how? I think the Giants are giving up like almost their next to last or third to last in points allowed this year.
That's crazy.
Their defense is not New York Giants defense. Mm-hmm. And because of that, Eli Manning has been like, oh shit, I need to put some points on the board. He's pressing, and he is like, I think he leads the league in turnovers this year. And you know the Bears, who turn over the ball, even when you think you're doing the right thing, they first a turnover. Peanut Tillman got that ball punched down pat. I forgot that one time he punched the ball, the ball just happened to bounce right back into the receiver's hands, into Darren Sproles' hands. He got that down pat. So if you got a quarterback who leads the league in turnovers and a defense who is just sucking butt right now, this just plays into the Bears' hands for a good bounce back win. So that's what I'm hoping for right now. Unless the Giants do something about that defense, the Bears should have a very good outing next week.
And then Detroit, I know we're tied with Detroit in our conference, but they have the tiebreaker against us, correct?
Yes, they do. We're both 3-2, but since they beat us, but we got to remember, though, to all y'all Detroit fans, y'all still got to come to Soldier Field. You can see you held turf on your home field. It all comes down to when you come to Chi-Town. You can talk shit if you beat us in the shot, but if you hold ground there and we hold ground, you can't talk shit.
Yeah.
So until you come to the Chi, remember, and I'm pissed off right now because I got Megatron on my fantasy football league team, and the last second I happened to see that he was scratched from yesterday's game.
Mm.
That really hurt. Your number one draft pick, playing against the Green Bay Packers, I mean, come on. Calvin Johnson would have had over 200 yards catching. I would have won this week. Instead, his ass out, and I lost.
That's fucked up, man. Well, you didn't know.
Fantasy, like that. See, fantasy is huge in these parts, man. It's real in these streets.
Hilarious. Well, hopefully the Bears will, get back on track next week and we'll increase our record to 4-2.
Well, I mean, let's be optimistic. Let's just be realistic about the Bears that we have. We still have a good defense. The offense is still a work in progress right now, but, I mean, I see it's 9-7, 10-16. If we do make the playoffs, we're 1-done. If we get lucky, maybe one game in the playoffs. But this is not a Super Bowl team unless this offense just with Trestman really gets jump started and protect Cutler long enough to go through his reads. And then of course, we need more from the running game. Forte barely got any touches yesterday. I mean, they weren't down by that much, but they weren't even running the ball. And that, you got to keep defense honest. When they know you're passing every single time, they're going to focus on that. There's one part, I mean, they were still down. Was it 17? I can't remember the exact score. It was only down by one score.
Mm-hmm.
And Forte only had 6 carries.
Wow.
This is almost at the end of the second quarter. You got to do that just to keep the defense honest.
Yeah, I agree. That is crazy. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And as we know, anything can happen, as they say, any given Sunday. So hopefully our beloved Bears can rack up a couple, wins in a row and we'll get back on track with things. So
yeah, it happens here, especially if New York Giants. Because for all your New Yorkers out there, we complaining, but y'all hurting like shit.
Hell yeah, I agree.
You got the Jets and the Giants looking like suck-ass. Man, it's got to be rough being a New Yorker right now.
Yeah, it is. Stephen A. Smith is hurting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll go on to some music reviews. There's
yeah,
been
scenes.
There's been a couple of highly anticipated albums that have dropped over the last couple of weeks, and I want to do kind of my take and my review on both of them. So the first one I want to talk about is the third studio LP by, as Jeremy would call him, Aubrey Graham, aka aka Drake.
Drizzy.
So on September 20th, he released his third studio album entitled "Nothing Was the Same."
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I mean, he released it to great, like, rave reviews. His as you all know, he won a Grammy for his last album, and this one people are saying is actually better than his last album. My take on the album is Drake does a good job of what he continues to do, what he's done throughout his career. He creates mood music and moods on his songs, and a lot of it is very relationship driven, which is the part that it's harder for me to identify with, because he makes a lot of songs for the women, but that's his bread and butter, and those are people who buy CDs, and that's kind of how he got on. And when he's doing his quote-unquote rappity-rap-rap-rap type of rap, he can definitely flow with the best of them. You know, a few of my favorite tracks on the album, when he actually is, you know, really spitting bars, is Started From the Bottom. That song's been out for a while.
Yeah.
He has a track called Pound Cake with Jay-Z that's dope. I really like that one a whole lot.
Okay.
And he has a song on a deluxe edition called All Me with Big Sean and 2 Chainz. And these are songs where he's just spitting, which is really great. But again, like, you know, out of the 15 tracks, I would say at least, you know, 9 of them are definitely, you know, fully geared towards the ladies. And I've been thinking a lot about that recently, because a lot of people, Drake's very polarizing. People either love him, or you have like people like JD who hate his guts. And
wait a minute, I know JD cracks jokes, but he really hates his guts?
Yes, he hates them. Like, hates them. Yeah.
I did not know that. I know we crack jokes on everybody, you know,
right.
I didn't know it was that much disdain.
Yeah. I mean, JD says he's soft and he doesn't like him and everything like that. But I've been listening to, you know, Drake a lot recently, listened to his previous albums. I was a huge fan when he first came out with his So Far Gone mixtape. I thought that mixtape was great. And with his studio albums, I haven't been as big of a fan, because again, they're very, you know, female driven. But I realized with this album, and I was listening to his previous album called Take Care, and he had a lyric on there that basically summed up the reason why some people love him, some people hate him. As you know, like, he's a young playboy, right, that dude? So he's, you
well,
know,
yeah. I mean, basically, how he got his image was, you know, he's from Canada, you know, he was on Degrassi, but, you know, when Cash Money saw that he can flow, they basically took him to Houston and said, hey, we need you just to be just a little bit harder, but be on these women, aka these bitches, and it's doing, and they threw him in a strip club for like a year and a half, and now you got the Drake that we have today.
Exactly.
I mean, what he raps about, the way he got his image, you know, he didn't get that in Canada. So they brought him to Texas. And it was like, all right, they put him in a strip club like every night. You know, Birdman and Weezy got that loot. They can go to a club every day.
Yep.
You know, night and day eating grilled cheeses and shit like that.
shout out to grilled cheeses.
Yeah, shout out to my grilled cheese with extra butter, you know. And then next year, you know, you're seeing the misogynistic, you know, way that he comes about,
right,
you know, with the women, you know. And I started to cut you off, Blacksmith. I just wanted to say this, and then I wanted to get your feedback on this here. This Drake album now showcases that I'm officially not part of the young generation.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that dude. And I thought it was more so the fact that, you know, Drake is, like I said, he has that young playboy mentality. He's been with a ton of women, so he has all these different angles of relationships he can rap about. And I have not had that same type of experience. I know that's one way I'm not able to relate. But even the whole youthful thing, speak on that more, Dave. Why are you saying that this was, you know, making us you know, feel a little bit dated?
I mean, and I'm not that old. I'm 33.
Right.
But we can tell this is a whole new generation,
mm-hmm,
basically. I mean, you heard certain songs, like Weezy's our age. You know, it's like, okay, he's our age. We still relate to him, even though he's making it for the young crowd. Drake now has made me feel that I am not part of the generation because of how he talks to the ladies.
Yeah.
Here he is. I mean, don't get me wrong. I actually like the album.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's a very solid album.
Yeah, the one thing you can say about Drake is, like, nine times out of ten, if you have great production, you can make it work. Yeah. And him and Cash Money have found the right producers that work right with his flow that actually is a well-put-together album from start to finish.
Yeah.
The thing about it that I know that I feel old is, here on one side of the coin, he'll talk about bitches and hoes and shit like that, you know, in the strip club, and he bouncing. And on the other end, you know, I know it wasn't on this album, but it almost made the album. He's talking about ladies love Beyonce. Oh, these ladies love Beyonce. And he's loving these girls. He's calling them bitches and hoes in one song, and he's loving them in the next song. What? And that's not... I don't know if you can tie this. We're both the same. That's not the generation I came up on.
Yeah, either they bitches and hoes on the whole album, or you love them the whole album.
We love them. They ain't bitches and hoes, and then we love them. That's the cross of this new generation of these rappers.
But and Drake represents it to the fullest because I was looking at his background. He has besides the fact, obviously, he's half Jewish, half black, but his mom is a Jewish teacher from Canada, and, you know, he grew up in that whole middle-class neighborhood and learned about the lovey-dovey, you know, upper-crust type of stuff. But his dad is a fucking pimp from Mississippi, yo. So he really represent both of those lives, like, for real, for real. Like, he got that pimpery in his veins, and he has that elitist, you know, whatever.
And to add, too, I don't know if there are good terms now, but his uncle is, I forgot.
Parliament Funkadelic, right?
No. Okay. His uncle is a jazz singer.
Okay.
I can't think of his name. I just knew his name in I'm sorry, we're on the show here and I forgot. But you know how I grew up, his uncle, who's a major jazz musician, is a Jehovah's Witness who had a major influence on him as well, along with his Jewish background.
Yeah, so he got a lot going on in that.
He's like a gumbo over there. He's a major gumbo. You know, Larry Graham.
Yeah, Larry Graham.
Larry Graham. And Larry Graham is, you know, for anybody wondering, he's the one that is a personal, you could say, a minister to Prince, who turned into a Jehovah's Witness. Larry Graham is a heavily respected man in the music industry as well, and the religious front too as well. So, you know, you can see how Drake, you know, has so much in him, but like in older hip hop rap albums, we heard so much about bitch this and bitch that, you know. I mean, the only thing closest to that would probably be Tupac, but Tupac only had that one song in the album talking about ladies keep your head up.
Right.
You know, in general, or Dear Mama, he just had that one song. Drake can go five, six tracks straight where it'd be, man, this bitch fucked the hoe in the club, you know, bounce that ass, throwing hundreds, and then say, oh, ladies love Beyonce, oh, these girls love Beyonce. He'll go back and forth like that, track after track, and then he'll mix in, started from the bottom, now we hit, and then he'll... You know, and then he go back to the ladies again, bitches and hoes, and he loves them.
Yep, and for that reason, he's going to have some lasting power in this industry because he's fucking with everybody.
Yes.
That's what he's doing.
And I don't want people to get the wrong impression. I think it's a setup, that Wu-Tang track.
Yeah.
That is like, that's different.
Yeah, you know? It really is. It's unique.
Yeah, no, he sampled that It's Yours from the 97 Wu-Tang Forever track.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he still has some hip-hop roots in there, so he's still being authentic with adding the new shit to it. Yeah.
That's the whole thing about the production.
And even on that song Pound Cake, he sampled Cream.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
And so when you hear that production, of course, I can honestly say that, you know, he's no longer part of my generation. But for me, when I hear the beat and I'm like, okay, the track comes in, I can tolerate okay lyrics if the track is okay. I know some people is like, it's got to be all about the lyrics. But look what the fuck happened to Cannabis. Cannabis won the dopest.
Oh, my gosh.
He came out. He was spinning so much stuff, you need an encyclopedia and thesaurus. Mm-hmm. But his production, besides that one track, the second round knockout, was suck ass.
Yeah,
and
it was.
Wait, actually, he had to enroll in the army and listen to army, you know, and shit like that because his career fell off so bad.
Yeah.
You know, so you gotta have that production, which keeps me, knowing that I said this is not my generation, but still keeps me listening to it and like, yeah, okay, I'll fuck with him a little bit. You know, I can go overboard.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, people like JD, the Drake haters out there, I think they need to kind of calm down just a little bit because he's doing his thing and he is, you know, definitely kind of bridging a gap, but also really, really keeping some of the older school influences, but definitely caring to the youth. So he's doing his thing and he puts out quality music. So,
and that's one thing I can say I do like about him. I don't know if he does this, you know, because of conscientious hip hop heads like us, or that's really his background, how he tried to goes to a homage to the past. Like, you know, you hear in the one song, he says, yo, I'm a Mac Dre, I'm a do it for the bass. Shout out to Mac Dre.
Right, and that's like straight up old, yeah.
That's straight, that's West Coast, you know, Bay, you know, I mean, he didn't, Mac Dre didn't make it huge, you know, in as far as like, you know, national front.
Mainstream,
when,
yeah.
Mainstream, but in the West Coast, man.
Legend.
He's a legend. You can't do, you know, I mean, and of course for the Midwest cats, he has made several quotes to Dilla.
Yeah. Yeah,
he
yeah.
goes ham about Dilla, yep. You know? And you look at a guy like him, it's like, man, what's this dude talking about Dilla?
Yeah.
You know? And then for the R&B people, he won the Doing the Leah album.
Yep. So he does his homework, man. And
yes.
He's wise beyond his years when it comes to music. I can definitely say that because, a lot of folks who's, you know, talking about, you know, his same age are not talking about what he's talking about, so.
Right, so that's the thing. He knows his production, and then he tried to reach out to the older, but of course, he knows he's for the ladies, and then when he does rap, he's for the younger cats. So on his hustle and his grind, I gotta give it to him. Overall, I can't be like, yeah, Drake's in concert, I gotta go see that dude.
Right.
You know, it ain't gonna be like that for me. I'm a little bit old for that. I'm gonna go see Questlove in 2 weeks. You know, that's the type of guy I am. Like, right. Yo, Questlove in town, yo, sign me up.
Exactly.
You know, but I gotta admit it though, it's a good album.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So shout out to Drake, you know, for putting out a solid album. He's also doing a little bit of ducking and dodging, as you all know.
I've been waiting for you to bring this up. We've been going on with this album here.
As you all know, you know, Kendrick Lamar dropped a verse that shook the world on the Control song, Big Sean's song, Control. Big Sean and Jay Electronica were on that song. It was Big Sean's song, but Kendrick's verse, the middle verse of the song, was the one that everybody was talking about. And he, you know, called out a lot of rappers, you know, saying he's way better than them, and he wants to make sure none of their fans ever want to hear a verse from them ever again. And, you know, he named Drake, of course, amongst a lot of different other artists and everything like that. And there was tons of people making response records to that particular song. Drake was one that did not make a response record. He actually had a lot of interviews with doing press for his album, and he said a lot of, you know, he respects Kendrick for what he did. He probably is not going to record any songs with Kendrick anytime soon. But he did what he did, and he said it'll the buzz will go away and it'll fizzle out like everything else does. So he kind of, you know, slight dissed him on that. And we have coming up in a couple of weeks the BET Hip Hop Awards. As you know, they have the ciphers. And word on the street is that Kendrick went ham on Drake in his particular cipher. Right, that dude?
I like the ciphers. You know,
I love it.
Man, the ciphers are great. I mean, the award show sucks. The only thing I'm waiting for is the damn ciphers every year. But on a national platform of the BET Awards, when every single person who loves hip-hop, not just black anymore,
right?
You got your whites, your Asians, your B-boys, it doesn't matter. On the cipher, he's calling out Drake by name.
Yeah.
Normally, these ciphers, they talk about this in general. It's like, yeah, you know how I eat you up? Yeah, blah, 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 Nah, Kendrick is calling Drake out by name on national TV, BET. And you know how BET does their war show? They replay that about a good 20 times by the third week.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
You know, so what people are saying is that when he, you know, dropped his verse on Control, that was just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, I'm not just going to drop this verse, get people talking, and that's going to be it. He's like, the insiders say, no, that's just the start.
Yeah.
I called out these cats. I said I'm the king of New York because, you know, what I've done the last year and a half, I'm not scared of nobody and no one ain't fucking with me.
Exactly.
I got them beats. He got some co-producers on his album, and not to mention, of course, you got Dre in your back pocket for a track or two.
Of course.
You know, a Dre track alone can carry a whole album.
Yeah, most definitely.
You know,
most definitely.
I got them bars, you know, I can eat your ass up, literally, DSI, no homo, you know, and that's how Kendrick feels, and he on top of the world right now. He said the only people he probably think that's better than him. It may be Jay-Z, and he really ripped Jay-Z on his own song. You know, Jay-Z had a hard verse in the remix.
Oh, the Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe remix?
Yeah, buddy. He came back and just ate it alive. Like, Kendrick Lamar probably got an ego on top of his world right now, but it's probably a good ego because he's writing good verses.
Yeah, I agree.
So he's on a whole nother level right now where that he's like, man, I'm tapping into my potential and I'm just killing the game and I don't give a fuck who you are. And for me to make myself even bigger, I'm going to take it back to the old school. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call you out by name, nigga, and I'm going to battle you. And you know what, though? You're going to pass off. You know what? Okay, that was just the start from Control. I'm going to go on a cypher and then eat your asshole raw. That's what. Am I right or wrong? The way the game plan, if you look at what's going on from his career right now, isn't that the game plan he's at right now at this stage of his career?
Yep.
And there's no one bigger in the rap game than Weezy and Drake. And you can easily say that Drake is kind of overtaking Weezy right now.
As far as popularity, most definitely.
Yes. I mean, you can say that, you know, Weezy's still one, you know, the top
guy. But he's already peaked. Yep.
Yeah, his prime has peaked and what he can talk about. I mean, he can only talk about eating pussy and eating assholes for so much.
He in my opinion, he was the most improved rapper of all time. And then after he hit most improved, he saturated himself too much.
All he talks about is, you know, I was swimming, ate a pussy and swam to her butt. Yeah. You know, tongue kissed her under the tongue. Yeah. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, every once in a while, I like a good Weezy track.
Yeah.
But Drake is that, like we said, Drake is that dude now. And Kendrick feels technically I'm the better rapper.
Yep.
You know, kind of like, you know, like you look at a basketball player, you know, it's like this dude gets all the love. But, you know, like how Kobe probably feels like I'm the better baller. You know, probably see like LeBron and all them. He's like, they got all this love. And Kobe, he's like, man, fuck y'all. I'm the better player.
Right.
You know, kind of like I see that little bit, you know, in that. He's like, man, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
I want that love. I want that homage. I'm from the West Coast and it's always this East Coast bias shit. Fuck that.
Yep, I agree.
And that's what I see Kendrick doing. And I'm going to be waiting. I'm going to have the DVR going. And I'm going to, when that comes on, I'm going to pause it so I can get me some popcorn ready to go and see what Kendrick does. That's just how I feel about that. And the thing is, if he really goes hard at Drake, Drake has no... The only thing he has to do is respond back. He can't let it slide if what we know Kendrick, he can't let it slide if Kendrick goes in like we know Kendrick's going to do.
Yeah, and I just saw... Yesterday, Erykah Badu went on Twitter and said, because she heard about what happened, obviously, and she said, Drake, you got to come back, boy. That's hip-hop. So so Erykah Badu was telling Drake he has to respond.
Well, you know, Erykah Badu and Kendrick got a little thing going. They got a little side thing going.
Right.
They say there's rumors, but, you know, ever since the award show, they've been spied together a few times, you know.
Yeah, you know how that go.
That could be the girl just, you know, you got your chick like, okay, yeah, my nigga says something. What you gonna do about it? You know how girls be. What you gonna do?
Yeah.
You know, amping it up even more. So you know,
it's gonna be interesting to see what happens. The last battle that Drake had, kind of sort of battle, was with Common, and Common ate him, but Drake still survived that because that's two different things, so.
That battle was like the same thing as when KRS battled Nelly. KRS won eight Nelly's ass alive.
Yeah.
But you know what? Nelly was one of the top rappers in the game. I mean, I say that as far as record selling because he had hits that are on the radio, pop hits.
Right.
And no one heard KRS won because KRS won at this time now doesn't have the fans, of course, to Nelly.
Right.
So when you have more fans, you're not going to win on pop. You can't win the popularity contest.
Right.
And that's how I saw the Common and Drake thing. I mean, he had him that Canada Dry quote, but then, you know, Drake comes in and says, yeah, I won. I'm like, no, you didn't. You just had more fans.
Yeah.
It had been lingered long enough. You know, Common dropped his album, then everybody shut the fuck up.
Yep. I agree. So, yeah, that's – we'll see what happens. I can't wait to watch the cypher. Another aspect of the BET Awards, I'm looking for another cypher, rather, is the Real Husbands.
Oh, my God.
And the word on the street is that – Nick Cannon was actually like going hard, and it was supposed to be kind of a comedy thing. But they said Nick Cannon really dropped some bars.
If you go to my Facebook page, I'll repost on the Facebook group page. I got a 30-second snippet of Nick Cannon.
Yeah, rapping. He was cursing, right?
And he was cursing.
Yeah.
Nick Cannon was going. It's the funniest. Like I've been seeing clips of it. Season 2 is going to be off the chain with Kevin Hart. This dude is on top of the world right now. But this show is the black version of Larry David's Curb My Enthusiasm, but it's even funnier because he's doing, I mean, it's because I like Larry David, but of course Kevin Hart's humor is more appealing to me because of the culture. Mm-hmm. We know we come from the same background. But I just can't wait for season 2, Jeff. I'm sorry.
It debuts right after the BET Hip Hop Awards.
Next week.
Yep.
You know, I mean, these guys are just going crazy. They just doing outrageous things, and it's straight funny comedy. And the fact that they just keep pushing the envelope and getting more people to sign on, like Chris Rock is going to be on there this season. you know, they added a few other people I know on there. So I'm like, oh my God, you know, everybody like that's a comedian wants to be on the show.
Yep.
And that's great when you got a show that good that people want to hop on, even if it's just for one episode as a guest appearance.
Definitely. I just shared the video from your page and our page that dude.
So. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. You know, and of course, you know, Kevin Hart, AKA Chocolate Dropper, is going to be giving them bars.
Yeah, them bars, son. No doubt. I want to get into, before we go to our next segment, I want to get into another album review. Pusha T, My Name Is My Name.
Pusha! She's still rapping!
Yeah, shout out to The Wire. That's a line from Marlo.
Hey, before you get started, I just want to say this, and I'm going to let you talk. Is he still talking about selling drugs? Because I haven't heard the album yet.
Yes.
Okay,
Pusha, go ahead. Yes, Pusha, he's a certified D-boy, and I'm the first to say that My Name Is My Name is D-boy rap at its finest. For those of you don't know, D-boy stands for drug boy.
At his finest?
Yeah, at his finest. Pusha said he's been boasting and bragging, saying he has album of the year, and I can't really disagree with him. And I know I'm saying a lot. This fucking album is only 12 tracks, and the clips typically do that. They don't release too many tracks.
They don't oversaturate it. They give you not even enough sometimes, like they tease you.
Yeah.
Like you wish it was like two or three more songs longer on
right,
every one of the albums.
Right. But for his lane and what he does, and I'm a huge fan of the clips, this shit is dope, Dave. Like it's
really,
in my opinion, it's on par. I don't know if it's better, but it's on par with Hell Hath No Fury.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I'm proud with that.
You know, that's my, you know me. Like, keys open doors. Yeah. I said it all day long.
Yeah. Like, the production, like, Kanye really took him to a different stratosphere with some of the production that he has on there. He also still has two tracks produced by Pharrell, so he's not losing that either. And he has No ID and The Dream and 88 Keys.
Wait a minute. He got 88 Keys? He got a beat from 88?
Yes.
People are sleepy on 88 Keys, yes. Okay? If all you got to do is just Google 88 Keys discography, all right? The dude is a beast behind the boards. And he's like one of those type of guys, like, he doesn't get the fanfare. He just comes out of nowhere and says, okay, I got a beat. And everybody be begging for that beat. He'll give it to say, okay, I think you can bless this one.
Shout out the Death of Adam. Go ahead.
Yeah, and he'll just fall back and just wait until he starts making some more stuff. 88 is dope, and he got a beat from 88 Keys on him?
Yes. So, like I said, I've never sold drugs in my life, but the way that the clips and specifically Pusha T, they paint these pictures, man, of the life, and it's both sides of it. It's not just all the glitz and glamour. It's like both sides of the life, and this shit is so visually stunning without even just about listening to it, man. Like, it's I like it. He has some guest features, but they don't oversaturate the album. He has Chris Brown, Rick Ross, The Dream, Jeezy's on there. He has this track called Let Me Love You with Kelly Rowland, and he sounds just like Mace on the track. Like, he does his best Mace impression. Like, he sounds just like Mace, and it's a radio hit, definitely.
Wait, he's like, I don't want to love you, but I still want
to
love
now,
you.
He's doing, hey, Papa, won't you come here to Mama? I'm the da-da, break you off proper. That Mace flow, dog, like, for real.
Oh, like that? Like Murder Mace?
Yeah, real talk.
Not Murder Mace, In Between.
Between Mace, yeah. And he has a song with Kendrick Lamar called not Nostalgia, but Nostalgia, kind of a drug reference, and he holds his own with Kendrick. Kendrick's been killing people on every single track he's been on, but Pusha T holds his own with Kendrick. So it's 12 tracks. The last one, I think, is going to be Dave's favorite track. It's produced by Pharrell. It's called Snitch, S-N-I-T-C-H, and it stands for Sorry Nigga, I'm Trying to Come Home. And it's a story track about Pusha talking to one of his cats in prison, who's about to basically snitch on everybody because he's tired of being in jail. So what? Snitch, sorry nigga, I'm trying to come home. He's saying, Pusha, I'm sorry, but I can't take this shit no more, so I'm a snitch. S-N-I-T-C-H, sorry nigga, I'm trying to come home.
Let's just make this clear, though. I ain't no snitch, so don't make it seem like it's my favorite track, because I'm out there in the streets.
No. Not like that. It's just the production and the storytelling I think you would like. Dave's not a snitch.
Nah, I'm going to get down like that. I don't get myself in situations where I could be a snitch, people. Real talk. That's how I be. You know, so, real rap raw. You know what I'm saying?
So I posted, a couple of links to his stuff. He has a video with Chris Brown called "Sweet Serenade," and I posted that on the Facebook page today. But he's not going to sell the most records, but he can definitely stake a claim that he has one of the best albums of the year. Maybe not the best, but one of the best. So make sure you check out that Pusha T again. D-Boy Rap at its finest.
Okay, I'm emailing you right now to resend it to me.
Okay, I'll go ahead and do that right now for you, bro.
Yeah, I'm actually sending this email as a reminder. Cool. So I want to hear this D-Boy Rap. I mean, people, if you don't realize, Jeff, you know, for all the demeanor he made, you know, he has, you know, he pulls back. When it comes to that straight gangster Southern Coke rap, it is the biggest irony, you know.
Yes, I like cocaine rap.
You see, if you meet and see Blacksmith, you know, he is the opposite of that. Okay, he is straight up, really, you know, corporate America black man, even with the glasses and all. You know, he could pass for a black Republican.
Exactly.
Shout out to Key and Peele for that skit. You know, black Republicans.
Right.
You know, but then every time I look around, hey, yo, Dave or JD, yo, you hear this new cocaine song? Like, nigga, what? You know, like I'm over here, like, man, you know, he'll sprinkle in the Dilla kind of joint, but, you know, 98% of the time, he's like, hey, yo, man, you hear that one crack song, man? Yeah. I'm like, yo, really? Blacksmith, really? It's the biggest irony when you get to know this man.
Yeah.
But it's funny as hell, though.
I like cocaine rap. I don't like cocaine, but I like cocaine rap. So
he doesn't apologize for it either.
And there's a lot of artists who talk about that, but I don't believe a lot of artists. And Pusha T is one I definitely believe. I believe him.
You know, like, he's telling the truth. I believe him too. Yeah. And I just got to say this again. It was just so funny for me and you to go see the clips
at Northwestern.
At your sister's college. His sister is a graduate of Northwestern now. At the time, she was a student, and the student body brought the clips there. We were the only dudes who probably was, you know, probably knew what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah.
That was just too funny. We the only one. We the two old dudes in the club, like, yeah, that's that D-Boy shit.
Yeah, Keys Open Doors came on. We lost it.
Keys Open Doors come. You got 19-year-olds like looking at us like, what?
What are you talking about?
You know about these keys.
That is hilarious. So, yeah, definitely check out My Name Is My Name. And you got to love the title because it's a Wire reference.
Yes, Marlo.
So
I like that. I got to bump it. As soon as you get it to me, man, I'm listening.
Most definitely. So I want to, end the show and talk about – well, not end the show, but go into our last segment of the show. And talk about boxing, man, because we got an exciting, you know – we had an exciting weekend of boxing, but like going into the end of the year, basically, we have a good hangover from the Mayweather fight because there's some solid quality matches coming up. And the first one was this past weekend, right?
Well, actually, last weekend.
Oh, my fault.
We had Julio Cesar Chavez.
Oh, yeah.
Last week, and his funky ass was fighting last week.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and I will say it. I can't stand his funky ass, his entitlement, spoiled brat self. You know, I mean, there is not one person that is really a true boxer fan that likes Julio Cesar Chavez. Even Mexican.
Say Junior, Dave. Don't
Junior.
You just say Junior.
Yeah, it's my bad. Even Mexicans are starting to hate him. You know that's bad. When I talked about the last show, how Mexicans felt about Canelo, when I didn't say a word, and they wanted to kill me and my dad and every black person in Las Vegas. I mean, as big as Chavez's daddy is, and he's the heir apparent, got his daddy's name. My name is my name.
Exactly.
You know, Mexicans didn't even turn on Chavez. I mean, he has a total, this is last week, I'm not going to go long into it, but he has a total disregard for the sport. Now, he claimed that, you know, since he's back from a year layoff because, you know, he lost to Sergio Martinez, and then he failed his drug test because 2 weeks before he was smoking that old weed. I mean, you can tell. I mean, how do you train for a fight as big as that and you're smoking weed? Come on now.
Mistake number one.
You know, I mean, so he had the suspension. You know, he went through that and had to pay the fine. And this was supposed to be at a contract weight at 163 pounds. Couldn't make weight. So they had to renegotiate it to 168. Then all of a sudden he got a cut and then it got pushed back a month or so.
What weight class is he?
Well, he should be fighting that fucking cruiserweight the way he looked last Saturday. Remember, he fought last year at 160 pounds.
Right.
It got so bad about him making weight because his disregard for, you know, properly training. they had to renegotiate the contract several times where that he came in at 100, well, weighed in the day before 173. He refused to go on the unofficial scales, but people are saying he was knocking on 190, 195.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. There's no way there'll be a rematch between him and Sergio Martinez because he can't even fucking make 173 pounds.
That's
let
crazy.
Alone come down to 160. You know, so, I mean, he won, but that was a gift decision. So, you know, if Andre Ward wins coming up, and that's a fight in November. We'll talk about that in a second here. So, Andre Ward, you know, that's the biggest money fight for him. He wants to fight Chavez, and he deserves that. I mean, Chavez doesn't deserve to fight Ward, but Ward has fought everybody that he can actually fight and has been beating everybody's ass at 168. So, I don't mind him going ahead and beat the shit out of Chavez for some money, you know. So,
who did Chavez fight last week?
He fight Brian Vera. And Vera was at a disadvantage. The fact that, you know, I mean, Chavez probably weighed about 20 pounds more than him, mm-hmm. easily. I mean, and he outlanded him. He outthrew him. It's just the fact that Chavez being the bigger man, of course, the punches, you know, had the more effect. Like, you know, you would see four of Brian Vera's punches, one of Chavez would do the same type of damage, but he was the more active fighter, you know, and he displayed more to me, and I thought he should have won the fight. But, of course, you know, they got it, you know, Chavez, they gave it to him like they did. It was a bad decision, as bad as almost as the Mayweather decision.
It was that bad?
It was that bad, yeah. One judge had it 98-92. In a 10-round bout, you thought Chavez won 8 rounds when everybody, every media outlet felt that Brian Vera won 6 rounds.
Wow.
That tells you the big difference there. It was just as bad. When people think that Brian clearly won 6 rounds and that you think you gave Chavez 8 rounds, I mean, you're clearly saying that, of course, the one punch that he would land is better than 5 Vera punches. But there's also things like ring generalship, you know, and, you know, and activity and not just being pitter-pat punches and having clean, effective punching. That goes into scoring as well. And, ring, you know, that ring generalship when you're taking control of the fight, that mm-hmm. goes into play too as well. And I thought Brian controlled it. So it was such a bad decision. They're talking about a rematch in December. So that may work out if he gets a rematch and then he can at least get into shape. And if he does win clearly this time, since Ward fights in November, it sets up for Ward and Chavez at a pay-per-view.
I got you. That makes sense. We'll definitely see what happens with that.
Yeah. And then this weekend, we had Miguel Cotto.
The return of Miguel Cotto.
Yeah, it's the return of him because, you know, last May, he lost to Floyd Mayweather. Wasn't a bad loss when he lost to Floyd as much. I mean, he lost the best boxer in our freaking, you know, in this era right now.
Any boxing better than Canelo did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the last, like, I don't know, like at least 7 or 8 years, you mm-hmm. can say that he fought better than anybody.
Yep.
You know, and the way he fought him. And then he lost to Alston Trout in a fight no one wanted him to take. People gotta remember though, Alston Trout is a big junior middleweight.
Yeah, he is.
You know, he could fight at middleweight. It's just the fact that his punching power is not there. You know, you got someone that kind of height and that kind of range. He just jabbed Cotto to death and made Cotto wild his game plan. So everybody thought, hey, Cotto has lost a notch. So he goes ahead and fights this Saturday against Devin Rodriguez and knocked his ass cold out in the third round.
Knocked him the fuck out.
And a couple of things, Blacksmith. It's great to see Cotto as that was. I mean, he came out. I mean, his bread and butter is going to the body in that left hook. That's when he's doing that and using the jab to set up those punches and being aggressive, mm-hmm. Cotto's a beast.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So Freddie Roach, who's now trained him now, was able to pull it out of him for 2-plus rounds because it was 20 seconds in the third round, and the fight was over after he hit him with a right cross and left hook, and motherfucker was through the ropes fucking out. But it's almost like fool's gold. You know, because
why you say that?
Cotto at this point in his career is no longer an A-plus fighter. He's been through a lot of wars. He can hang with A-plus fighters like a Floyd Mayweather, right? But he's no longer an A-plus fighter. I mean, Cotto at his best, when he fought Sugar Shane Mosley, when he fought Zab Judah, I mean, oh, man, that was Cotto at his best when you saw him fighting those fights. Even the first half of the Margarito fight, mm-hmm. when he ended up losing, those first 6 rounds, man, that was Cotto at his best. Cotto's a B-plus fighter now, and Devin Rodriguez is a C-minus fighter. So you know what that does when you got a better fighter like that who's had a bad outing? You go ahead and showcase him to get the people thinking he's back. And we don't know truly if he's actually back or not because he fought a guy he's supposed to do that to if he was in proper shape and he wasn't a shot fighter.
So it wasn't a true test is what you're saying?
No, it's not. But I like what he did because Freddie Roach did not try to change anything. He just basically said that I just want you to do what you did best because for some reason, the last couple of years, you have not done what you do best. And he made emphasis on his left hook, which is lethal, and going to the body because he loves to dig to the body. If you let it be there, he's going to grind you out. He'll take your body out. So when he does land that left hook, you're going down. And that's what happened to Devin Rodriguez. So with this win now, he's got mad options. He's getting paid, Jeff.
Okay, what's next up for him potentially then?
Well, everybody knows, and I talk to you guys, that the Battle of Mexico and Puerto Rico, Canelo and, Cotto. But that's not going to happen right away. You know why?
Why is that?
He wants to be the first Puerto Rican to win a title in four weight classes, and they're already talking about him fighting Sergio Martinez for the middleweight title, moving up to 160 for the fight.
Oh, wow. And I know Sergio only got a couple of fights left in him, right?
Sergio has looked bad the last couple of years. He is not a big middleweight anyway. He is truly a junior middleweight who got the opportunity to fight for the middleweight title, beating the shit out of Kevin Pavlik. And so since he's middleweight title champion, he just stayed at middleweight. But, you know, technically he's a true junior middleweight, if anybody knows anything about Sergio. But he's just been that good to fight at a weight class higher because he couldn't get the fights at junior middleweight and you know, he's been doing what he's been doing. He's had a lot of injuries. You know, he hurt himself in the Chavez fight where he had to have surgery.
Right.
And his last fight in Argentina, you know, he's out again for the rest of the year and I hurt himself again. So, but he's recovering right now. So he may not even do a tuna fight. They may do some early next year, you know, maybe January or February pay-per-view, Martinez Cotto. Now, the problem with that fight is, you know, Martinez has been showing signage and slippage. And I actually thought he lost his last fight. You know, he got the gift decision, too.
You think he thought so?
I think so. He didn't look good at all his last fight. I mean, you can make a case for a draw. You can make a good case for a draw if you watch that fight again. But he looked bad in that fight. So if Cotto looks the way he does and he's healthy and he was talking about how him and Freddie Roach had a great camp, you know, and if even though Sergio Martinez is coming off these injuries, his thing is his athleticism. He's knocking close to 42. People forget he's almost the same age as Floyd Mayweather. So when you're getting old and his main thing is athleticism and he's had several knee surgeries and that limits his mobility, that's going to be in Cotto's favor even though he's come up in weight. And on top of that, too, Martinez has not been a big middleweight anyway.
That makes sense.
So I could easily see Cotto beating Martinez if this is the Cotto that is a B-plus fighter, you know, who Freddie Roach is showcasing his talent. Now, if that does happen, and he becomes the middleweight champion, you know who he's going to fight next?
Who was that?
Rematch with Floyd Mayweather.
Uh-oh, are you serious?
I'm calling that.
So he's not going to fight Canelo after that if he Martinez?
Nope.
Explain why, that dude.
Because the one thing that people talk about how great Floyd is, that does he got to go to middleweight to showcase how great he is, right? Because there's anyone from 140, 147, 154, he can beat hands down. We've seen that with what he did to Canelo.
Right.
I mean, it don't matter if you put Austin Trout in there, everybody's talking about fight Trout. No. I mean, it was a close fight between Canelo and Trout, but, you know, Canelo won that fight and dropped Trout. Could you imagine the witness tree that Austin, even though he's tall, he's like 6'1", I mean, Floyd would just dance circles around him and box the shit out of him. You know, it'd be a boring-ass fight. That's why the fight won't happen anyway. So anywhere from 140 to 147, Floyd is going to beat regardless until Father Time catches up to him. But what if Cotto beats Sergio Martinez and has the middleweight championship and everybody talks about the only person who's given Floyd Mayweather problems is Cotto and he moves up in weight to even make it an even greater advantage for Cotto and make history. Cotto gets the biggest payday compared to the last fight he fought Mayweather. Floyd had the chance to win a sixth division title and possibly his 10th or 11th actual championship belt. History for Floyd, big payday, and possibly revenge for Cotto.
And that would be next September?
That would be in September because it's either going to be, I hate to say it, that Floyd might be fighting Amir Khan. I mean, Danny Garcia, of course, is on the list, but there's been a lot of rumblings that Amir Khan is just officially ducked Devin Alexander. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to hold out to try to get the Mayweather fight in May because that is going to be Mayweather's biggest payday. I don't care, even though he didn't deserve the fight, mm-hmm. it's going to be the biggest moneymaker when you draw in the Muslim community in England behind what Amir Khan is going to bring.
Yeah.
So whoever he's going to fight, Mick, we know he's going to win. There's no one out there. They're all good type. There's good champions out there, but they're not going to beat Floyd in May.
Yeah, he'll walk through him, whoever he fights.
But September, if that's only contingent if Cotto fights Martinez. And Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated tweeted Saturday night to Lou DiBella. He was like, hey, you need to go ahead and put Martinez in Cotto. All right, hope he ain't scared. And Lou DiBella, who was actually, you know, Martinez's promoter, said, I'm ready for a bring it.
Wow.
So he was on record. And then Martinez has not shied away from all the talk. And Roach even said the next fight he wants is for Cotto to fight Martinez. And no catchweight. He wants Cotto to go up to 160. He wants him to go up the full 6 pounds. He said he hates catchweights, even though he trained Manny Pacquiao on a fucking catchweight fights, which I wish we could talk about, but don't have time. But then if you have that fight, then of course you have Mayweather Cotto. And then eventually, depending on how that fight goes, I think Floyd will win again, even though if Cotto will be the more aggressive fighter, I think Mayweather will win regardless. It'd be a good fight. But imagine the lead up with the shit talking between Freddie Roach and, you know, Floyd Mayweather Sr. and Floyd Mayweather Jr. Because Freddie Roach don't realize that even if it's Parkinson's, he talks more shit than anybody.
Yeah, he does.
You know, I'm not going to make fun of a dude talking, you know, with his Parkinson's, but he talks a lot of shit. He does. And then, let's say if this happens, if Cotto fights Mayweather, then you will see Cotto Canelo after that.
Okay.
Because at that point then, you will see Canelo fight at least two more fights, and he will have a junior middleweight title, and then you will have a championship fight because of the fact that since he lost his middleweight title, he would automatically be a top 10 guy in the junior middleweight division, whatever belt Canelo may have by that time. I think he would easily beat a Carlos Molina, who got an IBF title, or, you know, when Floyd relinquishes his belts, because he got all the other belts, that they might do an interim or, you know, eliminator for him to get those belts back, and then next, you know, Cotto can cash out against Canelo and call it a career. Now, that's about a year and a half worth of time, but don't say I didn't call it, though, the way this is all lining up, because everybody keeps talking about for Cotto, he's either got Martinez, Canelo, or we mentioned Mayweather, and that's the way that those three fights can happen, if he can beat Martinez.
Gotcha. The one last question I have for you is that if Canelo had fought Mayweather the way Cotto fought him, would Canelo have gotten a rematch?
The problem is that they have different – it wouldn't matter because he can't fight that way. They have two different styles. People – he doesn't have Mayweather's style, but he emulates Mayweather. He tries to be a boxer. He tries to be tactical even though he's not. You know, he tries to slip punches. You know, he digs the body, and that he's really good at that, but he's flat-footed when he does that. You know, one thing about Cotto is that he moves around his feet. He does have the agility that he moves around the ring, but no one says Cotto runs. He runs around the ring a lot. People don't realize that.
Yeah.
But, you know, but because the fact that, you know, he's been in some action brawls, that they kind of weighed that. But Canelo is a flat-footed fighter, so he can't fight that same way. He's not lighting his toes. He stands on the balls of his feet, and then he sets up to throw his punches. Unlike Cotto, where he can bounce around and set up with the jab and go to the body, or he'll come back and he'll be off balance. He comes with different angles and throws a right cross along the left hook as well at the same time in that combination. So the two different fighters, when you got Canelo, who is like a flat-footed version of Mayweather, It's the best way you can say if you watch any of Canelo's fights in the last four or five fights. Of course, you couldn't see it the last fight because Floyd has made them look like shit.
Right, I got you. But that definitely makes sense. That definitely makes sense.
And then to sum up, too, just let everybody know, you think it's a hangover, we don't got no more boxing. HBO has a boxing fight on every week for like the next month and a half. We got a boxing fight coming on for the Klitschko. Vladimir Klitschko does one this Saturday as well. Ugly fight. So he's actually passed Muhammad Ali for most title defenses.
Wow.
So he's in history. And the second longest title run that he's had right now. So he is making history, even though you may not think he's any good, but he is that good. It just, you can't fault the man, the fact that he beat the shit out of everybody, him and his brother. So we got fights going on this weekend on HBO. I forgot who's actually fighting, but next weekend we got Timothy Bradley. Actually, this weekend, is it?
Yeah, Bradley Marquez.
Bradley Marquez on pay-per-view.
On the 12th.
Yes, yeah. Every week we have, and then the week after that, we got Povotnin and I forgot who's fighting the champion, Mike Alvarado.
Oh, yeah, Alvarado provide. Yeah, that's going to be a good one.
Up. Then, of course, you know, you got Manny Pacquiao fighting in November. We got Andre Ward fighting in November. And just when you thought Showtime was done, no, they're not, because they're going to have Devin Alexander maybe fighting on November 30th. And then, of course, on December, I believe, 7th, you could have a pay-per-view with Adrian Broner fighting on that card as well against Marcus Medina. So almost the rest of the year, minus about 2 weekends, maybe 3, there's going to be a fight on Showtime, HBO, or if you check Monday nights on Fox Sports 1.
That's great. And pay-per-view, obviously.
And pay-per-view as well.
Well, Dave, make sure as we continue progressing with these shows that you keep our Jump Off fans updated on these matches, okay, as they happen. Because I know you'll be watching all of them intently. So.
Oh yeah, I haven't got a chance. People like the Sean Porter Julio Diaz fight that I actually saw the Thursday night when I was in Vegas. I think I may have actually seen myself in the audience where my seat was, because I was sitting behind Jay Leon Love, boxer of Mayweather Promotions. So if I do see it, I will make that clip and put it on the Facebook Jump Off page. Like, hey, check out, you got the pictures. But there I am sitting there, you know. But I'm, you know, that's just me talking out of my ass right now. I'm sorry. I'm just excited that I did see a snippet of myself, but I can't really claim it yet because not a big enough shot.
That is hilarious. Definitely. That's still great, man.
So. And shout out to, this is live recording right now. The Bulls just won. They're beating that ass right now. I know it's preseason, but Derrick Rose looks pretty damn good from watching
that's
the phone right here.
That's what's up.
That's how I wanted to end it on that. Derrick Rose looked pretty damn good in his legs.
Shot-town is back, no doubt.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, on that note, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. We hope you've enjoyed our latest and greatest episode of the Jump Off Podcast, and we will holler at y'all next week. Peace and love.
Jump off. What you want, pump, double clip, pump, ride, slump, jump off, homie, jump off. All these haters on my, don't jump off. All the streets need is jump off, jump off.